Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the By Yahweh's Design conference call for the 22nd of September, year 2021. I am Commander Dan, your host and chairman for this meeting of the House of Jacob Israel. The agenda for today's call is Meet Bud and Vicky, and we do dedicate this call to our Heavenly Father Yahweh, who is the great I Am. We also dedicate this call to his holy remnant, who are the believing sons and daughters of Jacob, who was later named Israel. Today, these people are known as the Caucasian or the true Israelite peoples of the world. Hallelujah, which means all praise Yah in ancient or Paleo Hebrew. To my Welsh kinsmen across the ocean, Shumai, and welcome to the program, Cumri Ambith. Callers will be welcome later in the broadcast. We do ask that you keep your comments and or questions short and also be courteous of other folks that might be on the call. We are in the question and answer mode, which means every caller is muted automatically until you indicate that you wish to be put into the queue. On a phone, that you would use star 6. On your computers, you would press the ask question button. Calls will be taken in the order that they are received. Our website is www.pastordan.net. And again, Pastor Dan is all together with no spaces, pastordan.net. We do remind you the daily mail page is up there with current events. Also, the listen live page is where you find information about how to join the call and the schedule. Let's see, our verse for today will be Romans 15:7. Therefore accept one another, even as Messiah also accepted you to the glory of God. Accept one another. Remember, we talked about one of the things that our Heavenly Father abhors is those who cause discord amongst the brethren. Okay, my welcome to the call to our brethren in other lands. A mes parents en français, bienvenue à l'appel. A mis parientes españoles, bienvenidos a la llamada. Zu meinen deutschen Verwandten, willkommen bei Anruf. Okay, so French, Spanish, and German, welcome kinsmen to the call. And tonight, of course, with the title Meet Buddy, or Bud, I should say, and Vicky, and that will be our guests. And if everything is working right, they can hear me. Can you guys hear me?
Check, yeah. 1, 2, check, check. Can you hear me now?
Can I hear you now? Yep, 5x5 coming in, and this is your first time on our show, so I'm going to be quiet and sit back, and you two, in any way you wish to do it, introduce yourselves to the audience.
Okay. Well, I'm Bud, and my partner is Vicky. We've been together for about 2.5 years, although we met in 1979 in Virginia Beach, Virginia. I know Dan, Pastor Dan, through a mutual friend of ours, Mary. Don't know if we're not sure if we ever actually personally met, because back in those days, I was a bit of a drinker. And nowadays, I found that I did find a cure for hangovers. That was to quit drinking. Haven't had a hangover since 1993, which is quite good. Nowadays, I know this is a red pill show, so I'm going to give a little bit of talk about where we're at and that in spirituality and faith and all. When I did get sober, I did a spiritual journey. I went inside, you know, because basically I got myself into a little trouble, and they told me I had to go to a program, and the program told me I had to find God. And so I went to go look to find God, and I went back to my to the church of my childhood, which was the Roman Catholic Church. There I didn't find what I was looking for. That was just stand up, sit down, stand up, stand up, stand up, stand up, leave. And then if you're really lucky, you know, they give you this book that's kind of sort of the Bible, and they got little passages that are kind of the Bible. And if you're really, really lucky, they might read one or two. And if you're really, really, really lucky, the priest would talk about that particular passage. But don't count on that, because that doesn't happen too often. And then you just get up and you leave. You know, so I didn't find God there. So I'm still looking for God. And I met this girl at a party, and I still have a hard time calling it a party when there's no drugs or alcohol there, but there was cake, so I guess you can call it a party. And then this girl was in a praise and worship. I think the denomination was the Assembly of God, and they were having a praise and worship show. thing on a Wednesday, and I went to there because I wanted to meet the girl. I never did hook up with the girl, but I did hook up with their youth group at the time, and they asked me about, you know, what's your faith in God? I said, well, you know, I believe in Jesus and all that, but I'm no born-again Christian or anything like that, you know, and where in the Bible does it say stuff like that? And the guy just casually said, read John 3:16, yeah? And so I'm like, yeah, okay. So I'm back and I'm doing my community service for my things, and I'm cutting up Campbell soup labels, and I'm watching Monday Night Football. And don't you know there's this guy in the stands holding, and they're kicking a extra point, and there's a guy in the stands holding up a sign saying John 3:16. So now that I'm like newly sober and awake now, I'm listening. I'm feeling the synchronicities a lot more than what originally got my attention. So we're going. So I get that. I get the born again thing, and now, yep, I'm definitely, you consider me born again Christian, but nowadays my spirituality has evolved beyond the need for any organized religion. I'm a minister myself, and so is Vicky, and Vicky has been a minister for quite a while. So now we our ministry, we call it We of Wellness. We don't preach what God you need to what you need to pray to or anything like that. We teach health and wellness. And our God, we consider our God to be love, because in nowadays, a lot of these strife nowadays are whose God's better, you know. And I look at some of the organized religions, and even in the Christian faith, where you got all the denominations, and what separates the denominations are the different rules you have to be able to
worship
in the way that they do. And rules to worship God just doesn't sound right to me. You know, I mean, there's basic things you should do, but to have this, this, and that, and you can't, and that, it sounds like you're excluding people, and that isn't what God wants us to do. Yeah. What's going on in the world right now is they're trying to divide us. They're trying to separate us any means possible. They started out with the mask and an unmask, and now it's the vax and unvax. And all they're doing is trying to separate us. And it is, in my opinion, it's gone way beyond whether you want a vaccine or not. It's gone way beyond whether you want to wear a mask or not. It goes way beyond any of that. And all it is do you want to be controlled, or do you want to live free? Because, and to top the story off, you were on top of this stuff way back in the 1990s. Yeah, and that, you know, you being anti-government back then, I admired that, but didn't know how you got away with it, to be fair. But nowadays, and there's a lot of things going on. What woke me up to the red pill stuff, because, you know, I'm a bit of a talker. I'm a bit of a comedian. I like to do some stand up here and there at the 5-minute circuits and stuff like that. Nothing professional, but for me, politics has always been just material for comedy. Nothing more, nothing less. And back in the day, you know, Trump's running for president, no big deal. He's, you know, and then he wins, no big deal. But then I figured the choice was between a rich idiot or a rich crook, and it was really hard to choose between the two. You know, I didn't even vote because I lost faith in the
system.
I lost faith in the system like decades ago. So now I'm just, we're going along, and then COVID hits, and I'm like, okay, now you're starting. Now I'm listening a little bit, because now I'm watching the pressers, and I'm kind of scared in the beginning. I really, you know, because nobody knew. Yeah, nobody knew what was going on. So I'm watching the pressers, and I watch, you know, Trump say this, and then the press say that. Well, do you hear what President Trump said? No, he didn't say that. Yeah, you know, I was watching it too. He didn't say that. Now I'm watching all the things, and I really didn't think it was as bad as they said. And then I start looking to alternative news sources and finding out that, hey, this thing, you got a 99.9% chance of recovering from this thing. Well, it's 99 point whatever, and then they split it down from age groups there. But I don't care what it is. When you start at 99, you know, there's not a whole lot of risk there after that 99 point something. You know, that's a pretty good chance of survival, I think, you know, because I've done some risky things in my life. I mean, I've skydived. I jumped out of an airplane 714 times. I don't know. No, 717 times. And I've jumped off the fixed objects 30 times. And, yeah, I know what fear is. I've even been married. So I know what fear is like. And what they're putting out there ain't fear, you know. And, you know, so what we're doing now is we're doing, let me get back to where we're at today. Today we are, you know, fully awake, I call it, not woke, which is there's a big difference between wake and woke. We see what's going on in our local communities, and we're starting to do something about it. We're going to rallies. We're showing up in school board meetings. We're getting kicked out of places for not wearing masks. I mean, we're doing everything we can. We didn't put a mask on from day one. I mean, we did social distance because, you know, they told us to social distance. So we rented a car. You know, we're in New York. So we rented a car and we drove to Texas. We figured that was as far as we can go and be social. So that's what we did. We never put a mask on. We stayed home for 2 weeks because we're retired and she was getting the pandemic unemployment, so we were good. After that, then they started talking about they switched changing from talking about deaths, and then they started talking about cases. And right there, that should have woke everybody up. I mean, if you didn't see that, if you didn't see that, like why what happened to deaths? And then you start looking at numbers, yeah. You know? Then you start, there's two numbers I try to tell people to look at, right? You look at the flu deaths and overall deaths of everything, because people die of something every year. I mean, it's an average number. It goes up about 10,000 a year, you know, year on year. So you're figuring from 19 to 20, that's going to be a big jump because they told us hundreds of thousands of people have died from this. Well, I looked at that and it didn't jump. It jumped a little bit, like it jumped up like 20,000 instead of 10,000, but it didn't jump all that much. And then I looked at the flu. Right, the flu deaths. Now, in 2020, there was in 2019, there was a boatload of flu deaths. We're talking 20,000. Like, there's a lot of flu deaths.
Millions.
Well, yeah, a lot, a boatload. I don't have the exact figure, but there's a boatload. And in 2020, there was only 6,000. It's like, wow, where did all the flu go? You know, it's just, I can't see how anybody right now nowadays can think of this what's going on right now is a deadly virus, as deadly as the Black Plague or the Spanish flu. And when you go through all that, you probably got a show somewhere that talks about the Spanish flu and how that was fake too. But nowadays, that's about it for me. I can I can keep talking forever. Obviously I like to talk. But now with Vicky and I, we do a lot of spiritual stuff, and I'm going to pass it on over to her to tell her where we're at, maybe even go with how we got back together and all that stuff, because I'm done talking for a little bit. I may come back into it.
Okay. I guess it's my turn.
Mm-hmm.
My name's Vicky. I'll stick with just that. And I was born and raised up here in upstate New York, but when I was 18, moved to Virginia Beach, and Bud was my neighbor across the hall. And he was cute and funny and sweet, but I was off in different directions in my life, and there's much more to the story that I need not get into at this point, but he was at my first wedding, and that was probably the last time I saw him for 35 years, and 5 years ago, his cousin, who is now passed, rest his soul, sent me a friend suggestion on Facebook. And I said, oh, there he is. And Bud was over in London at the time, and we started to communicate. And little by little moved, you know, not necessarily with each other in mind, but the way things happened, he ended up living back here in the States, and we ended up visiting, and things turned out from there, and we decided that we were going to get together, live together, and run my ministry together. I've been a teaching Reiki master since 2000, helping people heal in whatever ways I can. I've accumulated many spokes on the wheel to do that. My mother handed me what was then called a zone therapy chart when I was 14 years old, which is the same as a reflexology chart of the feet, and she said, doesn't this look interesting? Here, I'll put my feet up, we'll check it out. So I started doing my mother's feet, my aunt's feet, and you know, it just became a Sunday thing, so I got pretty well in practice, and it came out from under my attention as I was building my life and moving to Virginia Beach and living there for 18 years overall. And then there came a point where my brother had cancer. There were a lot of things going on at home, and it was time to come back. So when I did, I was looking for ways to be creative in my brother's process with cancer. And I came across the trade school, which is have an adult education program, and they had offered an introduction to Reiki, and it just sounded like something really intriguing. So I went to learn and found it was one of the most fantastic things I could even imagine. And what was even more fantastic was that when I started with it and it worked, I wasn't even through a whole class and it worked. And it continued to work and continued to be of benefit. And I offered my hands every place I could. I was waitressing back in those days as, basically a single mom. And, excuse me. I would help people at work, and they'd look at me like, what is going on? But, wow, it's not painful anymore, and it's not bleeding. And it was just so amazing to take people from injury and harm and so quickly be able to, in my mind, it's the same work that Christ did. The laying on of hands, the helping others with healing, helping people come back to the place where they have peace and they can heal. Because when we're in fight or flight, we don't heal. And right now what we're doing is being kept in fight or flight. And I have been witnessing this for a long time because back I had an issue myself, and a sweet friend of mine who was a nurse said, come on down, I think I have an essential oil that will help you with that. And I went, what? Because I had a lump in my neck the size of a pecan. It wasn't next to my esophagus, and it wasn't where my glands were either, and I didn't know what it was, and I didn't like doctors, and I didn't want to be guinea pigged. So I went, and she put some Thebes oil on my neck and said, take the bottle, put it on morning, noon, and night until your symptoms go away. And on the sixth day, my symptoms were totally gone, never came back, never had a diagnosis, didn't need one. I'm 16 years down the road now and healthier than I've ever been in my adult life anyway. And from there, I began adding aromatherapy to my healing practice. And the reflexology, Reiki, and aromatherapy together are a trinity unto themselves and all gifts that we can generously share with each other and that make a profound difference because they remind us of our nature. They bring us back to harmony and allow us to at least temporarily divorce the stress of the world. Because there is so much put on us that is absolutely cruel and unusual punishment and makes no sense whatsoever. And as I move forward in adulthood, seeing what a genuine, profound difference I was able to make with helping people come to the place where they can heal, because you're the only one that ever heals. In your own body. Nobody else does it for you. No doctor is going to heal you. That's not how it works. It's us doing our own healing with that force of love that many like to call God, but we are the product. One thing we can't argue about, we are the product of the love of millions, every one of us, generation after generation after generation after generation. The people that produced us, the families that loved us, the histories that we've had, we are the product of the love of millions, and that has been the creative force that drives us forward. And no one argues about whose love is right or whose love is wrong, because everybody knows love isn't wrong, and that it is common to all of us, whether we like that person or not. There's something they love. They know how to love. And as we move forward with all these false narratives about what things actually are, we're lied to the most basic level, to where most people don't know up from down anymore. I had the blessing of being raised by parents. I was born to my mom at 48 years old. I am 8 of 8, and she had ovarian cysts when she was 3 months pregnant with me removed, and that's how she found out she was pregnant. She was 8 years past having her last child, and I was thoroughly unexpected. And she was 48 years old. I grew up on Route 48. There were fours and eights interspersed in my life everywhere. And when I was 48 years old, I drove myself so far into the stress pool that I ended up in University Hospital in upstate New York with sepsis. And I had multiple organ dysfunction. I had kidney failure, liver failure. I was in ICU for 4 days. I had dialysis through a port 4 hours a day for 4 days. And I made it through ICU by the good grace and by my friend that had initially introduced me to Young Living, because she's a nurse. She stomped her foot and crossed her arms and said, "You are not going to treat her like a person who's dying. She has helped everyone in this room, and she would help you, and you're going to treat her like she's a living person, not a dying person." And that's probably why I was able to move further through in the rest of that journey. And at as I was coming out of the sepsis, through some of the products that I use as medicine in my home, I was able to bring myself around more and more all the time, because in the hospital, they don't give you good nutritious food. They don't let you rest. They don't let you even hydrate in such a dry environment. I found so many different tortures that were visited upon me, and amongst that, I found angels that I felt like just saved my life. But in that process, I can't tell you where, because it's a hospital blur, but one thing that's very clear to me is that I found myself in the Valley of the Shadows, and I said, "God, you better carry me because I can't walk." And right in what I call my love ear, I heard, "Darling, don't you see I've got you? That's why there's only one set of footprints on all those books and calendars and plaques you see." And I had been turning back and forth to look over my shoulder in the Valley of the Shadows, and I turned to the right, and there were waves rolling up on the beach and beautiful trade winds blowing and pretty clouds. And I had a pineapple shell in my hand with a straw and an umbrella, and God was calling me darling and letting me know that I was carried all along. Mm-hmm. And he said, well, I'll say he just for, you know, sake of the story. He said, "You can stay if you want to. You're welcome to stay. But if you go back to your life, it'll be better than anything you ever imagined." And I said, "Sold," because I had a 6-year-old beside my bed wondering when I was going to come home. And so I claimed my life, and I came back to this life, and every day I have gone further and further into claiming my life as the gift and the blessing that it is, and holding the door open for God's promise to become true. And every day I have seen the truth of that in wonders, miracles, revelations, and just more ways than I could ever describe in this format, put it that way. And as I moved forward, when I discovered that, Bud had moved back to the States, and when we had gotten closer together, I decided to go visit him for 3 days in Jersey. And I just went with him with whatever he was going to do, horse barn, delivery, whatever he was doing. And at the end of 3 days, I was just wishing I could bring him home with me. And he said, "Well, I've got a commitment to this house and, you know, this and that, but I trust the universe." And I didn't really know what he was trusting it for, but the next 3 days, he was on my phone texting me during the night on his breaks at work and just blowing up my phone all day long for 3 days. And on the third day, I said to a friend, "He better say something or my heart's going to fall right out my throat, and I'm going to make a fool of myself." I said, "When he calls, he better have something to say one way or the other." And now, mind you, that God is the only one that made a practice of calling me darling, as if that once is a practice, but that was enough. And so his phone call came. I answered the phone. He said, "How's my darling?" And I said, "What?" He said, "I've got your glass slipper." I said, "Excuse me?" He said, "Your hat and gloves." I said, "Oh, I left them in the back seat of your car." Okay. And he said, "Well, that's close enough, right?" I said, "Well, if that's close enough to a glass slipper, I guess you better start looking for who it fits." He said, does that mean I should change my relationship status on Facebook? I said, is that what you think we're doing here? He said, well, it's what I think I'm doing here. I hope it's what you think you're doing there. I said, look, Mr. Funny Man, don't you kick that door down because you can't put it back. He said, don't you know I fancied you back then? I said, no, you could have given a girl a clue. Oh, my goodness. So basically the rest is history because we decided we were all in and that was all there was to it. And he wanted to learn the things that I do and do them along with me. So he started learning Reiki, learning reflexology, doing it right along with me, which he has his own knack for. And we started, especially during COVID, even more so, going to the waters, going to Lake Ontario, going to Ithaca Falls, going to any water that we were in the vicinity of, and giving gratitude and praying for the water and with the intention that that was for the water in everyone because we are more than 70% water, each of us. So, you know, the waters that we see, that we enjoy being beside, we also contain. And we have, in going to the water, he started stacking rocks. And the next thing you know, we were having conversations with people. They're wanting to take pictures. They're, you know, they would start stacking themselves. 70-year-old man had never even thought about picking up a rock and stacking it. And the next thing you know, he was making beautiful creations that were just astounding for his first time. And the level of inspiration that people come to when we're out in nature is really something beautiful to behold. And then we collect rocks and he makes angels out of them and glues them together and gives them to people to help them remember how blessed and how treasured they are and how important they are to us and how much we want them to feel blessed and appreciated. And so that is basically our intention, how we move forward at this point in time as we inform, connect, uplift, and there have been a lot of interesting things happen. Mm-hmm. But do you have any questions? Like, there's a lot more, but, oh, all right, I got one. My awakening, my own personal awakening to my spiritual being was that actually right about 39 years ago, I was due for my firstborn son. And 3 days before, I ended up having him in October. He was a month late, and 3 days before I went in the hospital, my mother called me and said, well, I scheduled gallbladder surgery for a month after you were going to have that baby, but you haven't yet. So I'm going in the hospital tonight. I'm going to have gallbladder surgery in the morning. I said, are you worried about it? She said, same doctor that removed the cysts when I was pregnant with you, so I think I'll be fine. I said, okay, if you're not worried about it, then I won't worry about you. I'll, you know, keep you in my prayers. Call me when you're out of recovery. And I said goodbye, not having any idea it was going to be the last time I'd say goodbye to my mother. And I got the news Tuesday when I was due for induction on Wednesday that she was in the hospital brain dead because they had given her anesthesia that she was allergic to and left her alone. And that's, you know, the beginning of why I really don't like to do doctors if I can avoid it entirely, because they knew she had allergies. They never should have left her alone while she was going under, and it turned out that she was allergic to the anesthetic, regurgitated, asphyxiated her own lungs, and went into cardiac arrest, and it was 5 minutes before they discovered there was a problem. So I'm about to deliver my firstborn the next day, come hell or high water, because he's a month late already, and my mother's in the hospital brain dead. So on the third day after I had delivered him, my father called and said, the Lord took your mother during the night. Can you come for her funeral? And I was unprepared for that. I had 4 hours from hospital to airplane to, you know, when you're about to deliver your first at 10 months, you really don't have space for your mother's passing at the same time. You're kind of, yeah, on demand, let's put it that way. So anyway, so October 23rd of 1982, she passed, and October 23rd of 1984, I was putting my two-year-old son down for a nap, and when I set him down in the crib, we had a routine. So read a book, put him down in the crib. He'd lay down, settle down, no problem, never an issue. I put him down in his crib, and he held onto the sides like he had just turned to stone, and he looked up at me, and his eyes just saw out through the back of my head, it felt like. And I looked at him and said, "What?" And he reached up and just stroked my cheek, feather light, like just stroking the peach fuzz, and said, "I miss you." And his little lip quivered. And he stroked my cheek again, and he said, "I miss you." And then the look that was on his face disappeared as quickly as it had come, and he relaxed, and he laid down in the crib and headed toward his nap. And I stepped back from the crib and said, "I miss you too, Mom." Because he didn't know what miss you was. He was only two, and I'd been with him all day. And he was a rock'em sock'em boy. He's not going to stroke your peach fuzz light and, you know, have a trembling lip and tell me he missed me. It wasn't his words. It wasn't his understanding. It wasn't his voice. And as soon as I stepped away from him, I understood that on her exit day, my mother was able to speak to me and tell me she missed me. And that woke me up to the fact that it's not just this one life. And over the course of time that I've worked with other people, that I've counseled people as a minister since 1997 initially, so many different experiences that people don't share because they think somebody's going to think they're crazy. They don't think anybody will understand, but if you talk long enough to anybody, you'll find they've had experiences that they just don't typically share. Hmm. And I had come to the understanding of a lifetime that I had once upon a time that Bud was my spouse in that lifetime. And when I learned about it, I didn't know it was him. It was probably 20 years ago. And I had no clue that he would ever be in my future or we would ever get together. But since we got together, so many things fit into place that I just knew that he was my spouse in that lifetime. And that was a really interesting journey to get through from my point of view because he didn't know about it, but I did. So my understanding of it is different, having known for a long time and learned things about myself through that. But, yeah, this isn't our first time together. Mm-hmm. And I know it won't be our last either. So it's really interesting and special to be in a couple where we know that not only 40 years ago did we love each other, but we loved each other across lifetimes. And it inspires people so much. Literally, last week we were doing a spa day, and a girl I don't know from across the room said, "I just love your love. I just love it. That's awesome. I just love it." And because people can see when you move in love rather than moving in fear. We've seen so much fear. And it's devastating. And we're told repeatedly, "Fear not." And love doesn't do that, because when a mother sees her child is in danger and underneath the car, that mother will go pick up that car and move it off from her baby because there's nothing in her that says she can't. There's no fear of not doing it. There's only the love of getting it done. And that's where, for myself personally, that's where I feel like we need to live right now. Because we need to live in the space of there is nobody and no one that can tell us that we can't get this done, that we can't take back our lives, that we can't live in the Garden of Eden. And ever since last year, with being put out of work with COVID, Bud and I have gone to the water and we have said, "Isn't it awesome to be able to live in heaven isn't it great to have lakefront property for any sunset we want to see? And we rifle through the treasures of these rocks that are so beautiful and just enjoy and give gratitude because we were born of a mother and a father. And we are that. And we need to act like that, that we have, that, you know, if God was an apple pie and we're a slice, it's just like the rest of the apple pie. And we were told, this you shall do and more. Who's doing more? That's what I want to know, because I am, because I anoint people's feet with oils and I reconnect them with their, I show them the bridge between where they're feeling less than and their own spirit and their own power, the force of love that comes through them that can help others heal who have been hurt, who can help lift the saddened, who can help, you know, rescue the vulnerable. And we all have that power, but precious few people are doing anything but being in fear and telling others what to do. And it is absolutely abhorrent to me. Not because I judge them as doing anything wrong, but because I see the light in everybody and they are so much more. And for them to not understand the blessing and the treasure that they truly are and the part of God that they are, it's hard to observe, I'll put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
So at this point, when we go out in public and we serve other people and we go to rallies and we stand up for instead of fighting against, we seek to see the light in other people and to inspire that, to allow them to be their best self, because we've been taught in this world to shrink ourselves into less than we are so that others can be comfortable and so that others will accept us, because it's one of our highest values as human beings. But what's going on right now, to me, is worse than what they do to people in solitary confinement, especially to children. And I won't be silent. We have gone to our county legislature and spoken twice. We've gone to the Board of Education, and they wouldn't let us pass the second time and said that there was a sheriff in there prepared to escort us out if we tried going in without masks. And people said, why don't you just put it on so you can get in and then take it off? I said, because you don't claim religious conviction until it's inconvenient. That's not how that goes. Because when you have a conviction in your heart that this is wrong, it's a slave humiliation ritual to force mask people. Anybody can wear one that wants to. Children should not. It hurts them in ways that we have yet to understand. We see, because it's been allowed. But when my niece's kids call us grandma and pop-up, and my niece let me know that a week after we've been there, her son is telling everybody just whatever was taught to him during the time we spent together. So, no, grandma said it's not good for us to mask. Like, sorry if that upsets the apple cart of the indoctrination situation that you're putting them in, but it's the truth, and I'm not going to tell him anything else, and I'm not going to mask him to go anyplace. I'm not going to participate because it's wrong. And we should be able to say things are wrong without being opinionated, without being called something with an ist on the end of it, without being called names at all. If we are the children of God, what man has a right to tell us we can't have a voice, we can't have a faith, that we don't have rights, as if they have the power to take them away? It's obscene, absurd, obnoxious, and many other superlatives that could go along with it. It's counter to what our actual being is. And it's a poor assessment of what humanity is worth, as if we're a race. Because we've been given the idea that competition is a good thing, helps make you strong. The only thing is, it's not human nature. Because human nature is, you see somebody who stumbled and you go help them up. You see somebody who's approaching a door you're going to go through and you hold that door for them. You see somebody at, you know, coming down the road who's clearly in a hurry, just move over a little bit. Let them know they can pass by, because clearly you've got something going on and it's not my business to call you name, to succumb to my own road rage because I can. The excuses that people use to curse are amazing. Not that I haven't enjoyed using all kinds of words over the course of the time of my years of bartending, waitressing, and things that are in the past at this point. But when you learn that as you cast words, well, it's said that in the beginning is the word, but when we are first educated, we're taught sacred geometry in letter and numeral. And then we're taught to spell. But don't cast one, because then you're a witch. But when you are given letters as the form of communication, when you spell something out in handwriting, or when you type it, or in whatever venue you make that solid, or when you speak the spoken word, what are you doing but casting spells? Because spells are what we've been given to work with, and they're just called words. But words are used against us in so many different ways. Like when we began, we were the Republic of the United States. And then when the United States was incorporated, it became the United States of America. But the A being in the beginning means that it is without whatever follows. Excuse me. The MRI is based in mercy, and the Ka refers to sheep. So America literally means no mercy for the sheep. And that name was put on this country when it was incorporated. And they have everybody fighting to be Americans. They don't even know what the word actually means. And then we're fighting for unalienable rights, when the un means in the absence of, or the opposite of, the a means in the absence of, and that being two prefixes means we're left with lienable rights. And most people have never, ever even considered that the word can be construed differently than how it's offered and presumed in the public eye. And I, you know, we think I is our system of identification. The letter I has been described to me as the top bar being heaven, the bottom bar being earth, and the vertical line in the middle being the connection between the two. So I've always thought of I as the skeleton key to the universe, because it connects you with your divine source, because that's where your identity comes from. And then I realized that, well, not only is it your eye that's in, that you're looking with, but it's also A-Y-E. It can be heard as that. So what if our language has been offered up to us in such a way that we say, I do not comply, but the I is a yes vote. And then you say, do, I do, not, K-N-O-T, that it can be construed as when it's spoken, which means I, not my consent, as in I am bound into my consent. And things are just turned around differently. We're, you know, we're given a diagnosis. Die is two. A is in the absence of, gnosis is knowledge. It's to agree, not to know. It's choosing to remain in ignorance when you get a diagnosis. because the power that is within us, the force that is within us, can heal us. And when they show us all this entertainment, there are reasons why these messages are embedded, like, may the force be with you. It's a powerful thing. Love is a force. And it moves through all of us. It moves us through desire. It moves us through life and exactly what it is. And life has ups and downs. And as soon as you don't accept the downs, you don't accept the ups, you're flatlined. Because life is in motion. And we have to live it in motion. We can't stay with all these things that are lies. We can't stay in a place where germ theory is what's prevalent and what everybody is expected to be held to, when germ theory has never been proven. It's the analogy of the fishbowl. If the fishbowl is dirty, do you medicate the fish for a dirty fishbowl? No, you clean the fishbowl. And we're in a toxic soup. All this technology, all these literally microwaves around us, are causing a lot of illness that's being blamed on other things. And most people don't understand that virus is something that our body produces to cast off poison. Viruses are inherent. We're not going to get rid of viruses. And if we have an overload of virus, it means something's poisoning us. But they don't want us to know that or see that. They want us to buy into their misdirect, and they want us to continue to poison ourselves by inhaling our own exhaust and by taking on poison through a needle. There is absolutely nothing in any needle anywhere that we have a deficiency of that cannot be supplied through nature and natural means. And I fail to understand why people don't get why there's this like missing link in the understanding that the government has lied to us. They've almost ever only lied to us, and that they are not to be trusted, and they are also not our overseers. It is not their authority to tell us we have to do anything, because the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and the Declaration of Independence are there to keep us safe from the government, to limit them, not to limit us. And most people think, oh, well, what are we going to do about it? Well, stand up and claim your rights. Because when we first went to speak to the legislature, we were met at the door by two uniformed deputy sheriffs who were masked. And they said, you can't come in without a mask. And I said, I'm sorry, but we're both reverends, and our ministry doesn't allow us to practice satanic slave humiliation rituals. Are you telling us we can't be heard unless we comply? And he looked like his matrix glitched. And he said, I'll be right back. And he came back with our badges and showed us to the elevator, and we went upstairs where we were met by a legislator who took the press signs off in the seats and welcomed us to sit down. And we also were given cards afterwards and requests that we come back, because the legislator said that we need them, they need us, to be able to say our constituents are not going to allow this. They're not going to, because it gives them more power to speak for us. And when we walked out, we told the sheriffs, no disrespect, but we are standing up for your right to breathe as well. And they said, thank you. And we headed out the door. And the second time we went to the legislature, different building, there weren't even police there. And nobody had a mask on. And part of the gallery that was there was our county public health director. His name is John Chen Wong. And 3 days before, he had put out his weekly report that children were to be going back to school in September masked all day, that everybody was to social distance, and all these measures were going to stay in place. So 3 days later, he's here at the legislature sitting not far from us, and another friend and I approached him. She's a health coach, and wanted to meet with him to discuss how to better steer the community toward health. rather than just doing these blind measures, you know, and this insistence from above with no actual authority to do that. And he said he'd have a meeting with her, but and he shook hands. He stood face-to-face with us, no social distancing, no mask. He said everyone in public should wear a mask. Yeah, he didn't. Everyone should social distance, but he didn't. And he also didn't get back to her about having a meeting. And but she said in the conversation, well, you can't mandate something that's an experiment. And he said, and I quote, it not experimental, it is the result of 30 years of mRNA research. And I said, for this novel virus? And he said, oh, everybody has a different opinion. Okay. So you are putting out these directives that the public must follow because you're the public health director for this county, but you don't follow it yourself. And when I went to look at his bio and his information on the county site, it said, growing up in a developing country, and I'm thinking to myself, what country was that? It was never stated. I can't be sure it's China, because I'm just not that familiar with, I don't pay attention to what anybody's color of skin looks like or what, you know, where they appear to come from. That doesn't matter to me. But what does matter to me is when people start making rules for others that they don't follow themselves, especially rules for people's children that they have no authority to make whatsoever, except that somebody installed them into a position to crunch the numbers, because he's an epidemiologist. And that sounds like a doctor. It's not. He's basically a number cruncher. And that's all he's there to do is protect the state's business, to make sure that they're not giving out too much money and that they're getting the money put in the right places that they want, but none of it has anything to do with protecting or inspiring the public health or taking care of children. Not one bit. And in his bio, it said that he had a hard time, he overcame the obstacles of moving into this area with no connections whatsoever and had to make, you know, relationships and inroads and this and that. It's like, okay, you look, pardon my judgmental self for a moment, you look like a CCP infiltrator. You were installed, not elected, installed by a legislators who were elected, but you're not a doctor, never treated a patient in your entire life. You blow people off as opinionated who question the narrative at all. And I'm just at a loss, because as I look around, the majority of the public health directors and roles of that nature look like infiltrators to me, who are trying to destabilize and change things in this country. And it's not that we don't need things to change. We do, but not to the new world order. And, you know, when they put out messages about what it is that they're doing or what it is they want to do, they're already doing it. Like Klaus Schwab writing a book and saying, oh, by this time, you will own nothing and you will love it. Well, we already don't own anything, because according to them, we're owned. According to them, we've been S-O-U-L-E-D, sold, and are their property. That's the idea that they have. It's wrong, but that's the idea that they have and are working with. But mortgage, that word means death grip. They got a death grip on your life force, and they're going to make you pour your life right down their drain with all your attention because of all the taxes, etc. And one of the main, well, the main driver of this is insurance companies. Who gets away without paying insurance? I've been asking elders lately, got health insurance? Got life insurance? Got homeowners insurance? Got car insurance? Got other property insurance? How many different insurances are you paying on a regular basis just as one person? Even the corporations have to pay insurance, workman's comp, et cetera. And we've been kept in fear for a long time. I growing up, heard Mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom. the lone wildebeest is at the watering hole, not understanding there's a lioness with hungry cubs nearby. And you see the wildebeest get taken down, and you're reminded how fragile you are, how much trouble you could be in if anything goes awry. And meanwhile, you have car insurance to make sure you can continue to go to work with their car that they actually own. If you look with detail at the paperwork and how everything was put together, they want you to continue to be able to go to work and pay taxes. So, yeah, you can have car insurance just to keep you in motion to do the things that we want you to do. And that's not what our lives are for. I mean, people support their cats and their dogs, and they don't have to work on a farm. The dog would probably say different, but they're at their leisure all the time, and we pay for that. People walk their dogs around. They pick up their poop. The dogs are probably thinking, wow, we got it made. We've got, you know, a butler that just travels us right around behind us and takes care of everything.
God's spoke back to his dog.
And well, that's, you know, unless you spell it love. But to me, so many things are flipped around the other way. And in my life, I live from my heart. I live from the love that flows through me, the love that created me, the love that inspires me and blesses others through me. I am a product. My life, I live as that. And to do the opposite of live is evil, quite literally, according to the word backwards. So if you're not living according to what your heart truly says, not your lacking mind that says, oh, I need to have this and I got to have this and it doesn't matter what I got to do to get it, I got to do this. No, but your heart that would stop your car and go over and pull that duckling out of the sewer drain because that mother duck and the rest of the brood are having a fit and because you can. Because that's our human nature. Our nature is compassion. But the world encourages us to live opposite of that, to live in greed instead of agreed, in the absence of greed. And the way Bud and I partner together, the way we go in public together, the way we speak to each other, the way we deal with our relationships, the way we move forward is in compassion and in cooperation, and there is never an unkind word passed between the two of us. We start every day with harmony, quite literally, and move forward with that as our foundation, because we are the product of the mother and the father. But what are we doing about it? Because if we're just telling other people what to do and expecting them to dance to our particular drummer, the Lord is the authority. That means the one who is the author. And we each have a pen in our hand and get to write our own script. And if that wasn't true, then Bud would still be an alcoholic. But he chose differently to move his life from that. And there are those that say, oh, once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. But he, you know, going on 30 years later, he doesn't need a group to tell him how to live his life. He doesn't need to revisit that because all it does is re-cement it. You move forward and you choose differently, or you don't. But if you don't, then you're sitting in one spot wanting one thing and then feeling like you never have satisfaction. And to me, that's no way to live. So we move forward satisfied that we woke up in the morning, that we get to breathe fresh air, that the birds, the trees, the grass, the water, they all showed up for us. Other people show up for us every day, and it shows up for us, not against us. Because as soon as you're in resistance, you're suffering. Anyway, you take a turn.
Well, real quick, Ralph up in Canada would like to know what you did for your neck. When you were discussing earlier, I think you said you had.
Oh, for the thing that was in my neck? I put thieves oil on it. It's a Young Living essential oil blend. It's a proprietary blend. And it's all pure essential oils. It is clove, cinnamon, lemon, rosemary, and eucalyptus. And I put it on directly on the spot, morning, noon, and night. It was kind of hot because it's a hot oil. You can dilute it if you want to, but I put it on neat. And for 4 days, I put it on morning, noon, and night. So 12 applications. What I didn't know is that, and I only speak for Young Living, it's been my medicine for the last 16 years, is that when you have a saturation that you're repeatedly dosing, it will stay in your cells and continue to work for about the next week. So I stopped at day 4, and I gave her bottle back because at that time I didn't have financial sufficiency to be able to pay for it. Actually, I just gave her a bottle of Thieves yesterday, the same person, so I guess I paid her back. I gave it back to her, and I went 2 days without it, and by that sixth day, my symptoms were gone. And I have been able to help others with things like, literally, I'm not going to ask if I'm allowed to say this out loud, literally brain tumors have disappeared with the use of orange oil. A particular young man who was in a senior year of high school at the time that had tumors on his brainstem. And I gave him orange oil, I gave him instructions for how to use it, and gave him 5 bottles. When he went for his next MRI, they were not present. And he went on to college and other things instead of into brain surgery, into chemotherapy, into ramping up the cancer stem cells to create the stage 3 and stage 4. So, yeah, that's what I did. 4 days of application, 6 days to symptoms totally gone.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have a name. I don't have a name for it. I don't need a name for it because when I was in the hospital with sepsis 12 years ago, I was on the oncology ward because they had the equipment that was necessary to keep me going through. And my son's father was afraid that I had cancer because they put me on that floor. It was just the best place to put me for what I needed, not because I had that. And if I did, they certainly would have found it because they were looking for what was wrong and what was going on with me. And, yeah, that was quite an ordeal. I'm so happy to have survived it. And my loved ones, this one of the things I think about a lot is that any of my loved ones would have saved me from that experience. But they also would have hobbled me, just like the story about the man that sees a butterfly struggling to get out of the chrysalis and he cuts it out, thinking that he's helping it. But what he doesn't understand is that the butterfly needs to struggle to pump its bodily fluids out, you know, that used to be part of the caterpillar, out into the wings to create the strength of the wings. And without that, the wings don't become what the wings can be with the natural progression of things. So in trying to help, the man killed the butterfly. And if someone had tried to prevent my journey that I took through the hospital, they would have prevented me from my experience with God, where I came to know what that is for me. Any, you know, everybody has their own experience and their own ideas about it. But I know that I was out of here. And even in God's arms, it is my choice. So what man has a right to take that? And is it even a good idea? Because I've seen others walk their road and I wish I could save them from themselves, but it's not up to me to decide what their experience gets to be. And part of what I use in my healing practice is a lighthouse because it's significant of our third eye sight. And it will show those who are lost into safe harbor. But lighthouses don't go out into the ocean chasing ships and saying, over here, because that lighthouse does not know what that ship's journey is. But it stands strong in its own light so that others can see to choose which way to go. The lighthouse doesn't decide. The navigator does, as we move through things. And that's how life needs to be. This whole idea of medical rubber stamp is so ludicrous. It makes no sense whatsoever when you really pay attention to what it is. Because we have our sympathetic and parasympathetic systems. And one is fight or flight, and the other we can repair in. But when we're in fight or flight, our blood pressure shoots through the roof because we might need to be running from a tiger. And our blood sugar shoots through the roof because we might need to be running from a tiger. And then our adrenaline spikes for the same reason, and our digestion shuts down for the same reason. So when your blood pressure is up, your blood sugar is up, you can't sleep, and your guts are tied up in a knot, it's a sure diagnosis that you are under stress, because that's what the body does. So in the medical format of things, well, if you have high blood pressure, we have to give you this pill that will regulate that, because your blood pressure is supposed to be the same all the time, because we have this chart, you know, that you need to go by. And it doesn't matter if you're a 300-pound man or a 15-year-old gymnast, your blood pressure should be the same, and your blood sugar should be the same, or at least within an acceptable range to us. Except that putting chemicals into an already stressed body does not de-stress it. It doesn't undo anything. All it does is maintain illness and hogtie the body's ability to self-compensate for the environment that it's in. And how can that ever be right? To override the immune system that is our gift, that protects us here until we annihilate it, until we accept surgery, until, you know, because people say, oh, I don't believe in vaccine injury. Well, an injection is surgery. It is an injury, inherently an injury from the very beginning. So every vaccine is an injury by its very, you know, the very understanding about it. And what's going on right now is not even that. It doesn't fit the definition. So, you know, of course, in September, they changed the definition because they need to change all the words so that nobody understands what's really being said, because it's not really your mother. It's just your guardian. And it's not your brother or sister. It's your sibling. And, you know, you discriminate against other people when you don't call them chest feeders. And I can't. You know, I'm a mom.
Well, you know, yeah, that all started back in the 70s when they got us to call a baby a fetus.
Oh, gosh. Well, yeah, because it's not born yet.
Right. Well, that comes
out of
the Talmud.
So it's something different then.
Right.
Yeah.
That's a Talmudic thing. But the point of it is they got us calling it a fetus, and then after that it was okay to kill it.
There are so many nicks in our armor made over time. So many ways that we have been compromised. This whole narrative that's going on right now, I have an elder veteran friend who has given me a lot of insight over the course of time. And she told me early last year that this whole plan that's going on right now was hatched back in 1974. And I thought, oh, geez, you know, so nothing novel about that unless you mean fiction. And I want to say within the last month, I heard Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, who is very astute. She's like triple board certified. She's run her own ER. She's absolutely brilliant. And she's been blowing the whistle on injections for a long, long time. And within the last month, I heard her say, I researched this back to 1974. I said, there it is. Everything I've been told, as much as it is not known in the mainstream, it becomes known in the mainstream. And not because I told anybody, but that's another thing that we've been educating about, is that we have a civil peacetime flag. Most people don't know that. It is blue stars on a white field with vertical red stripes. And it has been used by the Coast Guard if they're in international waters on a peacetime mission. But it is never flown behind the president. It's never flown on any dais anywhere. It is never put into any flag configuration anywhere that we see as the public when we give a pledge of allegiance. And why not? Why are we not educated? I literally spoke to a professor who teaches at Lemoyne College. He's a history professor, and three other colleges in the Syracuse area. And I asked him if he could identify the flag, and he could not. And I thought, how pitiful is it that a history teacher that teaches in four different colleges doesn't even know this flag exists? Why are we never given the option to pledge allegiance to peace, to the people? Because the other flag signifies the military, and it's a commerce flag, but it pertains to the military, and the military tend to think of it as blanketing the whole country, because the military is to protect the whole country. But is it really the military that protects us, or is it that force of love that moves through us and that carries us already, that carried us to here? Is that the kind of protection that we need? And when it has yellow fringe, it designates war. And when I asked our legislature, why are we not ever offered this flag to pledge allegiance to, I said, I'll tell you why, because none of our legislators knew of that flag either. I asked them, and not a solitary one. And I said, the reason that we don't is because there's a war going on, and they don't want us to realize that it's on us. Mm-hmm. Always has been. Mm-hmm. Because the people that finance the wars have always financed both sides, and therefore they always win. Win, win, win for them. It's lose, lose, lose for us. And my personal way of moving forward at this time is to divorce win and lose entirely, and to go for the win, win, win. Because every person in a situation can win. There doesn't need to be a loser. So the class I taught last night, it was in a healing center that a friend of mine owns. She has set it up as a private membership association so that here in New York we can do whatever we choose to do without government intervention. And she wasn't finding ways for it to be financially sufficient. So I said, I'll come and teach classes, because then I can pass on what I've collected all this time, because otherwise why have I collected it over these years that I've been mm-hmm. helping people, counseling and learning through it, my own experience, etc. So I learn the most when I teach a class about what's effective and about what people respond to and about what they really want to hear. And what I find that they want to hear is somebody who speaks authentically, somebody who doesn't need a script. Why does it end in crypt anyway? Mm-hmm. Because those are dead words that you wrote before. When you speak from your heart, when you speak from life, there is no script. You just move through it, and mm-hmm. you express what is true for you at the time. So as I express, I win, because I get to share what I have, and the gift is in the giving, and I also get to learn more about how to be a more effective teacher. And the person whose venue that I'm teaching in wins, because she also has a support store that goes along with, so she can bring more attention to her area and what she's trying to offer people for their better health in actuality, not just things to keep you in disease. And then the people who show up at the class also find their own profound revelations in it. And they tell me, you guys don't charge enough. Mm-hmm. So if mm-hmm. they feel that they got served and not their wallet raked through, and I feel that I got to serve and therefore am served, and that supports my ministry, and I support another reverend who has a little bit different ministry than I do. Win, win, win. There's no lose. There's no lose whatsoever. We don't have to accept lose. Mm. We could opt it right out of our vocabulary entirely by coming into community and coming into harmony, like we did with you before the show. And like we start every day, because harmony is available, joy is available, love is available, compassion is available, kindness is available, And anybody can live in it that wants to. But you have to choose. Is that the life that you're going to live? Or are you content to just gripe about the same thing this Monday you griped about the last Monday, where you did the same thing and you felt the same way and you didn't feel like anything but a drone strapped to the grindstone? Is that what you're willing to commit your life to? Because a lot of people are forsaking their temple. They're forsaking their hearts. They're literally picking their poison in the name of a paycheck for a job that doesn't love them. And that they don't love either.
Mm-hmm.
And that to me is like the worst cancer. But it can be cured. It can be cured with love. If people express the love in their hearts. And we're in such a divisive, judgmental framework and thought form at this point in time that people think that forgiving is something that others don't deserve. And that they don't want to give, and that they're giving up something. To me, forgiving is to abandon the idea that some deserve your love and some don't, and remembering that all the love that you are is for giving. It's not to keep to yourself. You don't say, no, not for you. No, you didn't talk to me nice, so I'm going to be over here. I'm going to ignore you. I'm not going to care about you anymore. Go away. You forget that your heart is for giving everywhere, because you can either be a trickling fountain that's got gack in the plumbing, and that everybody's just looking at thinking, gosh, it would be so lovely if that fountain would just spray up over our heads and be beautiful. Or you can let all your love out. Then you get showered by it because you're living in it. It gets to be your experience of your life. Why do you want the experience of your life to be satisfying someone else's goals? Mm-hmm. Why do you want your life to be in dissatisfaction as your main focus? Why do people want their lives to be governed by others? And my personal feeling about that is it's because I hate to call it a nanny state because that's just another one of those terms. But in the course of things, as fathers have been taken off to war and either killed or brought back different, damaged, whatever the circumstances are, mothers are left alone with their children to have to fend for themselves. And it may be that dad's gone off to the war on Wall Street to try to, war for the finances, but dad's still gone. And mom gets overworked because the kids need to be taken care of, whatever it happens to be. So then the kids go into the school, and because nobody's at home to take care of grandma, if she can't be trusted to not leave the stove on, then she has to go in a home, and the kids have to go in a school, and then there's nobody in the home. And there's nobody except for the state and the school to act like parents to the children for more hours in a week than the parents get to parent the children in most cases.
Mm-hmm.
And in that space, you start to look at the structure and the system as your parent. And people think, well, the government wouldn't do that to us. They test all these things that go on the shelves. They wouldn't let it be out there unless it was safe. So if it's on the shelves of a grocery store, it's okay for me to get, consume, and, support my life with. So taking on the idea that what you have in the place of the parent, because your parents were off doing other things, because that's what life began to demand, you can't take on the idea that the government doesn't love you, because it's akin to admitting that your parent doesn't love you. And that is devastating for anyone. And therefore, a lot of people just can't hear what's real. They can't look at what's real, because it means divorcing their parents. It means standing up for their own being, their own rights, their own responsibilities. As if responsibility is a burden, but where would you be without your ability to respond? You'd be in the Matrix, in a pod somewhere, ruled by somebody else, nourished by someone else, to be a battery and pour your life force into what they want instead of being God's kid, instead of going and swimming in a freshwater lake and feeling the sun on your face and having friends and playing and immersing yourself in your family. I'm the last of eight. I got 20-some nieces and nephews and more family than you can shake a stick at. And I was totally cultured in that family. And I miss a lot of that family for assorted different reasons. But right now, I'm missing the human family. And I think everybody is. Because we're not allowed to have any certainty about whether or not we're safe. Because all over the place, there are people in masks with no understanding that from an evolutionary standpoint, I mean, the general population doesn't understand. The people who are pushing it understand very clearly. And that's, you know, you want to stay away from evil, right? But if you don't know what evil does, you won't recognize it. If you don't know what that corruption energy is, if you haven't seen anything different, if you haven't lived in anything different, if you don't know the difference between love, living, and evil, then, you know, you won't even see it. It's invisible walls to a prison for your mind, quite literally. And for us, we live in love. We affirm we live in heaven every day. And we are not bound to that because our lives are giving. We look for tomorrow. I've got an appointment at 3 o'clock in the afternoon of somebody she's been through a lot, and she's a helper. She's a master in her own right, but she's down right now, and she needs others to come and help her remember her spark. And that's what we're going to do tomorrow for no pay, because we can, because there's somebody we love that's hurting, and for no more reason than that. She needs it, and we can. We have helped elders go, do work to get their homes battened up for the wintertime because it's harsh up here. And you never know how harsh it's going to be until you're in it, and that's not time to be prepared or to get prepared.
Mm-hmm.
And I took the unemployment from the job that I was kicked out of by COVID and used it as payment for our ministry to be able to put gas in the tank, to be able to go to people, to be able to have essential oils on hand and go to people that were in the hospital that needed some real food for their bodies to use as the building blocks to recover, and they did. Even being at the lake, when people walk up and say, "Oh, that's beautiful, you just made my day. How do you possibly do that?" And he reaches in his backpack and hands them a little 3-inch-tall angel that he has glued together and glazed and hands it to them and says, "Would you like to take one home?" And people are mystified that somebody who's just a stranger at the lake would give them a gift that would touch their hearts so deeply. And it's so easy. And it's so precious. We don't have to settle for vicious cycles. We can move in harmony. We can choose differently. So, anyway.
Do you guys give out any contact information?
My phone number and my email address are public. And I'm more than happy to share those because I fear no evil. Because I know who runs my life, and I won't stand in fear of anything. So my email is Vicky, V-I-C-K-I, and it's Willoughby, W-I-L-L-O-U-G-H-B-Y, the numeral 8, @gmail.com. And my phone number is 315-343-7045. An introductory text is best, so I know to look for the phone number, because with all the telemarketers out there, I wait for a message if I'm not familiar with the number. But also in the message, let me know your phone number, because my phone doesn't connect those two things. It's like, okay, I got three different telemarketer calls, and one was from a person, and I don't know which is which.
That phone number again?
So 315-343-7045, and the email is vickiwillaby8@gmail.com, VickiWillouGhBy.
Got it.
Because I am Victoria, born to Grace and Ernest, and I hope that in earnest I have been graceful enough in being victorious and getting seeds to people's ears that need to let their hearts grow. Mm. We've had enough fertilizer. Got to have some seeds of wisdom and experience. My son one day was like, how do you know Italian food's better the next day? I said, well, I can't give you a link. I said, but your brother's entire other half of his family is Italian, and I can tell you for a fact, Italian food is better the next day. Just believe me. Mm. And if you don't, feel free to try. But, yeah,
exactly.
I can give you a link in cyberspace for it. Is the value of experience right now is being thrown out like the baby with the bathwater, like experience means nothing. The numbers, numbers, are like the highest value. Well, I saw the numbers and this and that. Well, take off that ERS and it's numb, because it numbs you to the idea that you have any power in the face of someone who has numbers, especially written down.
Mm-hmm.
Well, look at these numbers here. You know, numbers don't lie, right? No, but people use them to lie proficiently and very often. So
liars figure and figures lie.
Yeah.
That used to be an expression.
Liars figure and figures lie. Yeah. Yeah, you know, and there's so much focus on liability. Hmm. Well, can't do that because we'd be liable. It's a lie. It's bull. Because if I go into a store without my shoes, I'm not going to, you know, take you to court, because, and now that's me. And there are plenty of people that are litigious out there. They've been taught to be, but things can be relearned. I'm going to take my own ability to respond to what happened and not hold someone else liable. But there's all this. My favorite roller skating rink growing up, they stopped letting people roller skate. It's beautiful. It's still there. They won't let anybody roller skate. Well, because it's all about insurance and liability. You don't get to do that. So the insurance companies have been used to basically wind down the vice on all of us, because it takes your money, it takes your life force, and then it tells you what you can't do. Oh, well, in this park, you're not allowed to do that because it'd be liability. And no, you can't cook your dinner over a campfire because there'd be liability. Granted, things happen, but that's life. That's how you learn. And stupid should hurt. Because otherwise, how do you learn? You know? I think that we are pretty bereft of natural consequences. And because, you know, everybody gets a trophy. They've removed specialness. And, you know, in the name of saying, well, everybody's special. Yes, they are. But what is special about you? Because we're not all special in the same way. You know, if you judge a monkey and a fish on who climbs a tree better, the fish is always going to think it's stupid when it's known enough to survive in the ocean, but climbing a tree just isn't what it does.
Mm.
Everybody has their different role to play. What a boring world would it be if we were all the Mr. Smith program.
Mm-hmm.
Dan, have you seen the movie The Matrix?
Oh, yeah.
So yep. You're familiar with the Mr. Smith program?
Right.
Most people are unaware that we are all programmed to the Mr. Smith program. It just is a matter of what narrative you're programmed to, and what opposes that narrative. Because for Bud and I, if you walked in this room and say, oh, man. I just love this country since Joe Biden got in charge. He is the best president ever. He has made the best decisions for us, and I don't know why he didn't get voted back in and get voted in back in 88.
The agent.
Oh, you know, you just put a glitch in my matrix, you know. And people have different triggers for different things that will turn on that program and make you be in opposition to the other person. And there's been such great effort made to create that instead of just sitting back going, really? What do you like about him? What's he done this awesome? Do you know why he didn't run in 88? He declined from the race because of his cheating and plagiarism.
Yeah, he wrote the book on plagiarism. No, he actually copied it, but there you go.
plagiarized.
Yeah, I got everything figured out, though. Now, this was going to be a bit of a joke because I got everything figured out. I know why. I know what's wrong with the world, right? What's wrong with the world is warning labels. Now, warning labels are all the problem, you see, because back in the day, stupid people would do stupid stuff, and they would die, right? Now, that's tragic, but hey, they were stupid. You know, what can we do? But then somebody put warning labels on things, and now stupid people are not that stupid. Some of them can read, so they started reading these warning labels, and they stopped doing stupid stuff, so not as many of them are dying. So Darwin's just backed up. Right, so he's got to come up with new and creative ways of getting rid of stupid people. So he come up with COVID.
That's kind of funny you say that, because on this program we've talked about that quite a few times. That what if all this, because the Father can use anybody to accomplish anything, including the ungodly and the wicked. So What if this is the test for one, faith? Also, your ability to discern, laziness, slothfulness, idolatry, which is worshiping idols such as government and celebrities and media.
Yeah.
Okay, so in effect, what you're seeing happen is exactly what Scripture talks about when he said, I'm going to separate the wheat from the chaff in the latter days. And I'll be darned if you look at it from that standpoint, that's actually what is happening right now.
Yep.
Dan, have you seen the definition of COVID backwards?
No.
You know, like live is evil backwards. Lived is devil backwards. So if you're bedeviling yourself in the past, you're not even alive. You're feeling guilty. You're ashamed. You're, you know, in that position. Okay, I'm going to read it off to you. COVID backwards is divoc, D-I-V-O-C. Divoc is a term derived from the Hebrew word, I don't know if I'm pronouncing this right, but dybuk. It's D-Y-B-B-U-K, which is an evil spirit capable of possessing other creatures. And it's believed to be the suffering soul of the dead. The dybuk is the soul of an evil person whose soul wants to evade the punishment and tries to stay on this dimension by possessing another body. Dybuks are believed to possess poorly evolved creatures. The etymology, dybuk comes from the Hebrew word evil, dybuk, which means the act of sticking, and is a normal, nominal form derived from the verb to adhere or cling.
Interesting.
Yeah, you can look it up yourself. I looked it up on Brave and DuckDuckGo, not on Google. It is on Google also, but this was, you know, clearer and easier to screenshot so I could keep it handy, because there are so many things done backwards. You know, we're under Admiralty law, because I'm sure you do, and many people do. Many people also don't. They don't know that we are under Admiralty law, which is the law of the sea, because we come in on our mother's water and we are delivered. She is the mothership, and we are delivered to the doctor, who receives the product and registers it with the state. And we are given citizenship. And before our feet are able to touch the land, our footprints are taken, and they construe that as a soul contract, S-O-L-E, but also an S-O-U-L contract, because you are being registered with a birth certificate, and the birth is a space in the ship, and the certificate of product is what your birth certificate is. And then they, I'm sure you've already talked about it plenty on this show, but capitalize it and then trade your birth certificate on the live stock market, because this is essentially a farm. You know, understanding once upon a time I saw slavery by consent, understanding the human farm. And basically, we're herded like cattle. They tell us we're looking for herd immunity. And they use the corporate entities to try to rule over us. And the only way they can do that is if you claim to be that corporation, if you claim to be that name, rather than being the living, natural man or woman. If you claim to be a person, you're claiming to be a corporation, a dead entity, a corpse, or a ration. You know, right. And there are so many things put into the language, like why in learning is it earning right after the L? And in England, L is representative of the pound of money. Pound earning. We've always paid the crown. We never separated from London, from the crown, from the queen, from, you know, the monarchy. So all these different things, it's like learning. Oh, that's about earning. You can see it right there. And when I see things like teach, which granted, you know, I do, it's called that, but the T starts to look like a cross to me, like crucify each. And the ist on the end of racist, communist, ist, all over the place. It looks like is crucified to me, because I've started to see the T as the cross. And the way that the words, I have a book called Word Magic, and it talks about how all these different things are construed. And I've known for decades anyway about many different ways that the words are used and morphed against us, whether it's a homophone or an anagram, you know, what things are substituted for, like governmental. Well, you know, govern means to control, and you know, mental means your mind, but people don't typically think of things that are governmental as mind control. It doesn't mean it's not.
Right.
It's just how we're directed with the, you know,
right.
The Operation Mockingbird, the narrative that is put out to everyone, because, you know, if you repeat it enough, it's the truth, right?
Well, that's why it's interesting you talked about the herd, treating us like a herd animal. You know, that is also found in the Talmud, used by a certain group of people in this country and around the world. They look at everybody who's not one of their kind as herd animals that are here simply for their use and abuse, just as the cattle in the field of a farmer. So it explains a lot as to why we're being treated the way we are and who's behind it. And you'll find their names and faces and money behind most of the nefarious things going on. So in fact, back in, what was it, the 80s or 90s, when we went from being employees of small family-run businesses, typically Christian, we went to work for corporations, and we became under the auspices of human resources. So we were no longer people and employees. We were a human resource, much as your herd animals are animal resources out in the field. And they wanted to tag us and track us, much as you do on a farm today. You'll see all the cattle have a tag poked on their ears with a number on it so they can be tracked. And so now we're being tracked exactly like the resources on the farm.
Well, if cattle, when mad cow disease comes around, if you can track a batch of meat back to a cow on a certain farm, right to its stall, then why aren't we tracking pedophiles?
Mm.
Well, you and I know the answer to that.
Yeah, we know the answer
because they're in charge.
They're in charge, exactly right. So the inmates are running the asylum, and yet people keep, you know, one of the definitions of insanity is doing the same thing over and over, but expecting a different result. That's
exactly.
Insanity. And our people are guilty of that. They keep repeating the same behavior patterns and think that it's going to get a different result. Just like casting a ballot is useless when you have a completely rigged voting system that allows, as you pointed out, why the hell is that Chi-Com sitting there as the health director in your county? How the hell did he get in there? He can't even speak English properly. How did any of these people? And when I worked for Florida Power, and before that, the American Energy Corporation up in Michigan, they had a guy that could barely speak English, was the plant manager, and he became the one of the chief executive officers down here for Florida Power. Who put this guy in there? He has no background. He's got no bio that shows him to be technically competent, but he is a internationalist and probably a communist. So at the corporate level, they've been doing this for a long time. Everything that's centralized is communist. And we need to decentralize. If you look in Scripture, the law of Moses and how he established justice and society back in the ancient times, it was local. All controls at the local level. The only thing you have above that is dispute, the settlement of disputes, okay? So everything as far as day-to-day operations at the local level, the only time you need an outside authority figure is to settle disputes. And it's, again, done as local as you can get. That's where the word chieftain comes from, the head of 10 families. So your basic unit is 10 families. A chieftain was the head of the 10 families, and he only got called in when one of the 10 families couldn't get along with another one, and there was a dispute. And if he couldn't solve it, then they went to the guy that was in charge of five chieftains. And then that went up to the guy in charge of 1,000 people, okay? And it goes further up until the last guy was Moses at the very top, but he only saw the most unusual things that couldn't be settled. 99.9% of everything else could be settled at the first three levels of local government, local community. So the guy at the top is basically just there as an overseer and to make sure everything is just, so that if a community called and said, we've got a guy at the chieftain of 1,000 people who has taken a bribe and he's ruled against this family and we all know it. And so Moses would send somebody down with a probably 50 to 100 men at arms, and they would go find the scoundrel and probably execute him. So, again, you keep the bad people out of the system and let the people solve their problems at the local level. We've turned it upside down. We get everything from the top and all of their insanities pushed down on us through the idea of corporate law. And so our government looks more like a corporation than it does actual biblical governance. So everything today is upside down, absolutely upside down.
Now, it used to be, when you had a community that centered around the well in town, then people would go to the well and they'd draw up a bucket of what they needed, and it was the community well. Well, even a young child, if they saw somebody putting in the well, would just sound the alarm. Hey, 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 something's going wrong here, because everybody knows you don't put into the well. You take out of the well. That's not how it goes. When you are self-sufficient and in harmony with the earth and doing the, you know, the things that inspire and are sustainable rather than devastating. And it's absolutely flipped to where nobody gets a voice to complain about anything, to say, hey, this is wrong. And you know what? One of the most insidious things that was done that has been most detrimental to us, well, I don't want to say most because there's so many mosts, but very detrimental to us for almost the last 100 years, or over the last 100 years, is grocery stores. Because it, well, now you're going to be busy because you've all got to work and you need to be able to get food that's more convenient. So we'll have this stuff that's prepared for you. You know, my mother, with my father having a heart condition, was told she should be using oleomargarine. Well, way to fill his arteries with plastic. Mm-hmm. You know, the guy that was going on and different things that we were told, just like, you know, another thing you could get in grocery stores, cigarettes. You know, I went on Hulu when it first came out, and I found the Jack Benny show. And I thought, oh, how cool to look back before we even had a TV and see what TV was like then. And in his show, I don't know if it was in half an hour or an hour, but there were exactly two commercials in it, and they were each a minute long. And one was, you know, a guy giving you one story, and the other one is, oh, and here's Sheila. She's doing quality control on your Lucky Strike cigarettes to make sure that you have the freshest relaxation experience. So the two, a minute each long commercials that were in there were totally about Lucky Strike cigarettes. And Jack Benny, you know, dry wit comedian, right? I'm watching his show, and he's having a party at his house, and he's walking around to make sure that everyone who is smoking Lucky Strike. Hmm. It was nothing but advertisement from beginning to end, just making it cool to smoke cigarettes, because we'll get him to think it's okay, and in the beginning it may seem like it is, but then we start putting all these different poisons on the plants, and we'll say it's because we're doing pest control, and they are, because, you know, and people that work in pest control, usually the substances that they use are meant to attack the reproductive system, because you can break down the colony if you can keep them from reproducing. And everything from lead arsenic on our soils, oh, there's no bugs on me because I got DDT. You know, all these things that we were told in these advertising campaigns that started out embedded in our entertainment. And, well, you know, it's just Barney Fife, and it's just Opie, and it, you know, it's just Aunt B. I mean, there's no problem there. There's, I'm trying to even think because I wasn't even really allowed to watch TV back then. And it's not coming to my mind, the family names of, you know, the families that you look at, like that's supposed to be what family is like. And then the next thing you know, your entertainment is laced with how to undo the family. And advertisement all through it. And you're allowed to advertise cigarettes, you're allowed to advertise alcohol, and then you're allowed to advertise medicines? You bypass your doctor and try, oh, ask your doctor if Farxiga is right for you. They're not even promising improvement anymore. They're right. Just saying, talk to your doctor about it. Get to your doctor, because your doctor's going to tell you need to have a mammogram because they want to put some radiation through you. And your doctor's going to tell you you need to have a pap smear. And one of my friends asked this week, she said, you know, it looks like they use the same swabs for this PCR test that they use for pap smears. And since we found nanotech and ethylene oxide in the swabs that they use for PCR, and ethylene oxide is a known carcinogen, have they also been using that for pap smears?
If it makes money, they probably did.
And filling cervical cancer?
Right.
And what about the glyphosate and things used on the cotton crops that are used in tampons that women put into that perfect environment and adulterate it? And, you know, back when doctors had talcum powder in their surgical gloves, they realized that they were getting granulomas, these little tumors around their wrists and on their hands and that, because of the talc in their gloves. So they insisted that their gloves be made without talc. And it eliminated the problem for them. They went on no such crusade to take talcum powder out of baby powder, out of feminine hygiene products, out of condoms, and things like that. And I have a very good friend who's a retired earth science teacher who taught me that asbestos and talc are mutually occurring, that one does not occur without the other. So if you have talcum powder, you have asbestos. And if you have asbestos, you have talcum powder. And Johnson & Johnson has been pumping that out for how long?
Long time. Long time.
But you call it a different thing. Just like polio. You know, they say that vaccines eradicated polio. Absolute fraudulent lie. Because polio still exists, but now it's vaccine derived. It's not wild anymore, as if it was, you know, according to the germ theory in the first place. But now if you have this myelitis or that myelitis, that is, I'm sure there are other names as well, but transverse myelitis and all these unexplained paralysis, this and that, you know, there's MS and ALS and PMS, you know, they've got alphabets for everything. And half the time they don't even know, you know, clowns in America. But that is the inversion.
They just changed the name.
What's still here?
Polio is still here. They just
Just
like influenza today is called coronavirus. Polio is called, I can't think, it starts with a strange name like Queen or what. I can't think of it.
It's if it ends in myelitis, then they're talking about polio.
Yeah.
But there's transverse, there's different ones.
Right.
And I can't keep track of all the names for diseases because to me, we are energetic beings. We are carried in an energy field. I can show anybody where their energy field is and what expands and contracts it. And, excuse me, to divorce that idea entirely can't be considered care because people have hurts left over from when they were a kid and dad came in drunk and slammed the door and started screaming at mom or whatever the narrative from their life is, that inner child is still carrying around those hurts. It will affect every decision that you make. And people don't even realize that they're run by their own internal narrative that isn't necessarily theirs. So I had a friend who's 40 years old, and he acted all big and bad, chest pounding, tattoos, you know, Harley guy, etc. And I said, who was the first person to tell you you were bad? And without drawing breath, he said, my third grade principal. I said, how much of your life have you spent trying to prove your respect for authority by proving him right? You're 40 years old. How long has it been since third grade? But you're still run by that narrative. And that's not even your parents. It's just somebody in school. Because you were being a kid. You were doing what you did. And he looked at you and said, you're bad. And you wore that like it was your badge. Because somebody in authority called you that, so it had to be true. And people do that without realizing that they're carrying out somebody else's narrative. It isn't about them. It's just what that person feels about what they're saying. Somebody calls you a jerk. That doesn't make you a jerk. You just understand where they're looking at you from because they're always telling on themselves. People will only call you names if they're calling themselves names on the inside and somebody else has called them names and they're transferring it. If somebody tells you, oh, well, you're just totally inconsiderate. Look at their behavior. Guarantee you they're totally inconsiderate because they deflect what they don't want you to see in them. They blame it on somebody else in hopes you won't see what they're really doing.
Right.
And it's classic. So this whole narrative right now, oh, we're going to build back better. Back to what? The Holocaust you didn't end? Because I've been saying for decades, the Holocaust did not end. It was globalized. When Operation Paperclip brought over 700 of those involved with Hitler over here, put him in charge of Bayer Corporation, put him in charge of BASF, put him in charge of all our pharmaceutical stuff, they just continued it and gave the story that somebody won, just like the story that we won the Revolutionary War and that we won our independence from the British Crown. We're still paying the British Crown. It's just a story.
Well, the world is a stage. The world is a stage, that's for sure.
Yeah, but is it stage 3? Is it stage 4? I mean, losing track of what stage it is in this cancer that's going on through people's hearts. I get to be at a loss for words, which may seem totally amazing, but I don't know where people's hearts are. You know, I clean for an 83-year-old woman who, in the face of pedophile priests being charged and arrested, she said, everybody knew Father Patrick was like that.
Hmm.
Okay. And you kept quiet about it? You never said? Nobody ever? Because it used to be that the church was the center of the community. The church bell rang and everybody flocked. They gathered with their community and they raised their voices in praise and they came together because when two of them were gathered, that's where God shows up, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what love is, when two or more are gathered. Except, we know there's such a thing as self-love now as well. But, if the story was that you needed to confess your sins, a father does something maybe he shouldn't have with his daughter or his son. He confesses it, and now the priest knows.
Right.
And the priest says, well, we can use that. Because bring your son in and we'll foster him, we'll make him an altar boy, and we'll do what we want. They don't say this, but we'll do what we want because we already have you red-handed. You confessed, so you're not going to say anything about anything we do. And if you do, you're going to be ostracized by your whole community because I'll out you for what you did in the first place. So you lose, you lose, you lose, you lose, and I win. Because when they started outing this, I heard a press conference that happened in Pennsylvania. It was the attorney general for the Pittsburgh area. And there were 99 priests who were arrested and charged. And he started talking about the things that they did, that the priests lied to their parishioners and they lied to the police. But after every one of these incidents, they sent a handwritten detailed report to the Vatican of everything they did. It was a success story. Nobody looked at it that way. But why would you report all offenses specifically back to the Vatican? Of course you're going to lie to your parishioners. Of course you're going to lie to the police. And you're also going to lie to those boys that are put in your charge. Because this is what he said, which I was mystified that I was actually seeing this on TV. He said that they would, once a boy was groomed, they would have him wear a different cross so that other priests would understand that this one was already on the fast track. And that they would tell the altar boys that they came into this world naked and that's how they should come before God. But they can't, before everybody, so you have to wear the cassock but wear nothing underneath. Doesn't that make them very easily accessible? And then would tell them that, back more than 2,000 years ago, when Mother Mary gave birth to the Christ child in the manger, there was no doctor there. There was no anybody to help her. So she had to lick the baby clean herself. So you just lick this clean and you will be giving homage to the Christ child's birth. But this is only a rite that we offer to those who were really special initiates. So if you tell anyone else, they'll be jealous that you received these rites and that they didn't. So you'll go forth and tell no one. And these are the things that he's saying in a press conference, the attorney general about 99 pedophile priests. I was aghast at the actual literal description and that they would report back to the Vatican, which makes the Vatican the largest treasure trove of child pornography handwritten on the planet.
Wow. Well, we're at the two-hour mark. I think we'll go ahead and wrap this one up if you guys don't mind. And if you'd like do more down the road.
As you wish. We're just here to serve little bits and seeds of knowledge, experience, and hopefully wisdom and inspiration as we go. But reality, you know, we live in this world. We've got to be real about it. If we lie to each other about it, we're just still doing the same work.
Yeah, absolutely.
Dean, we appreciate you.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, this is a ton of information here tonight, a ton. So I'll put out a link later on, also your contact information to all the people, and put it up on the website. And again, you have an open invitation to come back, and we can talk about any issues or just general statements, whatever, in the future. But before I close this out here, any last comments from either of you at this time?
Thank you for your service and educating and for being on the front lines, because when you're willing to put your face and or your voice and your truth and anybody else's out to the public, that's a very valiant effort, and it is very appreciated, and it's very necessary at this time, because we have to come together, we have to talk, we have to come to understanding. And if anyone can actually provide proof that anything I said was disturbing is wrong, I would so be happy to be wrong. I really would. I would appreciate that. Bud?
Well, appreciate the opportunity, and you know, we're here, we listen, we talk. It's what we do.
Yeah, if anybody needs counsel service in the local area or at a distance, we will help in any way we can.
And on all Facebook, right. HJ Bud Connor. I stack a lot of rocks. I put up a lot of pictures like that, so it's good stuff.
Okay. And I'm under Vicki Willoughby, same spelling as my email address for Facebook, if anybody wants to connect that way.
Okay, excellent.
And thank you so much.
Yep,
you are
you
a
guys.
Gentleman and a scholar and totally awesome in our book. Thank you for what you do, and have a great night.
Yep, you too.
Oh.
Oh, wait a minute. Okay, hold on.
Yeah,
okay.
I feel like it would be wrong if I didn't end with my personal prayer that I have written and offered globally to many, and that is, may the loving light and grace of God shine through your heart to show you the truth of your magnificence. And I hope anybody within the sound of my voice at any time frame, anywhere, will take that to their hearts and realize the magnificence that they truly are. And we can heal this world.
Mm-hmm.
Amen.
Amen. Yeah.
Very good, guys.
Thanks, Dan. All right.
Take
have
care
a good
you.
One.
Bye-bye.
Good
you
night.
You too. Bye-bye. All right, ladies and gentlemen, again, that's Bud and Vicki up there in New York. wonderful, wonderful information and news and insights. And again, folks, we as a family are never going to agree on every single issue that comes up. Some of us know things, others don't know, et cetera, et cetera. The point of it is these messages come from the heart. And they're meant to heal, to uplift. They're not necessarily being put out there as being something you could find in Encyclopedia Britannica, so to say, okay? This is basically a message to our people that we need to come back to center. We've gone way off the track, and I think that's the importance of what Bud and Vicki are doing and saying. And we've talked about it on this show for 22 years. We have gone way off the track, way off of what our Creator Father had intended for us, and we need to get back to center, okay? This world is in travail. The prophecies tell us that. The whole world is in travail. The same word in the Greek language is talking about the pain of childbirth as experienced by a woman. So the whole world is experiencing this pain, waiting for the deliverance and the sons of the Most High to be manifested. That means for the righteous men to show up instead of just texting or hiding in corners or in basements or whatever to show up on the field of play so that the wicked can be dealt with, all right? So anyway, we're going to close tonight's. We just say, Dear Heavenly Father Yahweh, we give you the praise, the glory, and the honor. We thank you for this opportunity to share with our brothers and sisters around the world. We pray that the truths that were spoken tonight will go out to the ears of those that are meant to hear it. We also ask that you would forgive us of any uncleanness within us and give us good discernment to see through the lies and deception of this time period. Give us a stiff backbone to stand tall and stand proud for the truth and for honesty and justice in a world that no longer cares. We want to be shining beacons, as the analogy of the silversmith in Scripture is referring to us. How does the Father know it's time to take away the flame of persecution? When he sees a reflection of him in you. So if you're in the flames of affliction, maybe you have some things you need to get rid of. So we try to emulate our Father above as we walk through this world. And we do ask a special blessing on those who are suffering with poor health or with issues within their families, emotional issues, physical issues, whatever. And Father, we ask that, again, you would walk with us day by day and guide us by thy Holy Spirit. And protect us from our enemies. We ask all this in Yahweh's precious name. Hallelujah.